Yep, looks like it's working.
Hit record, okay.
Yep, I see it. It's picking it up.
Very good.
Okay, this is Terry Jordan, the volunteer for the library, and I'm here talking to Bill Hoffman and Greg Murphy and Bill Reese, former members of Liquid Fire, current members of Liquid Fire.
The Fire Babies.
Now the Fire Babies.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk, it's June the 4th, 2019, and a little after 7 in the evening, we're going to be talking about Woodstock and their relation to Woodstock, and St. Joe's relation to Woodstock, and possibly how Woodstock affected them, if it did, whatever. And just sort of a wide-ranging interview here, and I'll put this down. We'll kind of get started. Let's talk a little bit about your band. You guys started in '68, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right.
What type of music did you start off with, or did it change much as time went on?
It did change a lot because we added brass later on. Mm-hmm. Right at first, we didn't have brass in, but we were always usually playing radio contemporary rock, mm-hmm. rock and roll. And so we always played the favorites that people wanted to hear, that type of thing. It sells well that way, but we hadn't gotten into really writing original material or anything like that mm-hmm. for a while. But started in '68, ended in '82. There's 35 different members in the band. Bill Reese and I are the only two.
Really?
The only two originals.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. So there was a turnover, but the trick was always keep the name. Yeah.
Who are the other originals?
My gosh. I'd have to start going through. You know, you can look like Russ Allen and Dennis Schneider and Greg Millsap and Bob McCroskey and...
Jim Thorpe.
Bruce Windsor, guys that I don't have pictures of, the keyboard players. There's a lot of keyboard players that had turnovers who played in...
Warner Rogers.
Played in... Who's the guy played with you in Charlie and the Stingrays?
Art Hedinger.
Oh, yeah.
Hedinger, he played with us.
That's right.
So there, you know, just there was a bunch of them. So there was a turnover of a lot. Now, when Greg came with us in like 75, I believe, I think it was 75... And he was with the 75 to 82. So.
Okay.
What clubs did you guys play? I mean, before I got there, did you guys play
the
Beast Lodge?
Started out playing Leavenworth. Leavenworth at the Crazy Cat, it was called. And that's probably one of the first clubs in '68, I think, besides the Moose Lodge. I mean,
right. Originally, we'd play for anything. High school dances.
Yeah.
Yeah, you played at CB.
We used to rent out the American Legion or BFW out in Cameron.
We used to rent that and just
have our own dances. We'd rent the hall and charge admission.
Really?
Yep.
That's a great way to do it.
Yeah. Ran posters all over the county and
because out in Cameron they may not have a lot of music.
Yeah,
like
had great crowds out there.
Yeah, I bet.
I always remember that dance floor was kind of precarious as it went up.
The private club was downstairs and open to the public. Dance floor and everything was upstairs, and when we played there, they had to put the support beams back in under the floor to support the weight of all the people.
Because it was packed.
That's great.
When we weren't there, they took them out to make more room downstairs.
Yeah.
They had to put them back in when we played.
Because I was going through some old editions of the Sentinel, which was the CB paper.
Uh-huh.
And this was the year that I was a senior. You would have been a junior. And you played, it said the Liquid Fire was going to play at the basketball homecoming in the gymnasium. That would have been probably... maybe January or February in 1969.
Yeah.
In the old CB gym.
And we used to do a lot of that. We'd play homecoming dances all over the area and proms.
A lot of proms. We read a lot of yearbooks.
What was the idea for the horns? And when?
I don't know if it was just my love. I had a love for horns with Chicago. I was a Chicago nut. And so I really had a hankering to get horns in the band, and I can't remember who the first horns. I guess Danny Snyder had the sax first.
Well, Russell played saxophone too.
And Russ played sax, and so it just slowly evolved into the group. And you know, there was a lot of tunes out there that had brass in them besides Chicago. But
the Buckinghams.
So all that.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
Do that.
Because the thing that I remember about you guys, one of the things I remember about you guys, because I was in a band too, you know, the Paper Sun.
Right.
And there were, you know, we were a typical bass, drums, two guitars, organ lineup, which I think was fairly typical. The thing that was different about you guys is with the horns, you could do Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Right. You could do Chicago. You could do the Buckinghams. You could do a lot of those songs that a lot of kids wanted to hear.
Not knowing right away, no. I didn't realize that brass would set you off.
Oh,
from the regular bands. Otherwise, a four- or five-piece band is a band just like another band playing the same songs.
Sure, right.
But when you had the brass, all of a sudden, it was a big difference. Yeah, big difference.
Yeah.
Either that or you should have a girl singer or something like that.
Yeah.
I think the other thing was that we had the three of us who could all sing, plus two or three of the other guys in the band could sing.
Always a lot
so
of
we
vocals,
had anywhere from 3 to 5 to 6 part harmony.
Well, that's
that
great.
We could do.
That's important.
Which a lot of bands, if they had a lead singer, that was all they had.
Yeah. Well, we had. I was a lead singer in our band, and then Jamie Hummer sang harmony.
Yeah.
And then there were a couple songs that I would take a break, and Jamie had written a couple songs, and he would sing lead on his, but. Yeah, you're right. It was generally a lead singer and maybe one person doing harmony.
Yeah.
Whereas we were doing Three Dog Night. We were doing Three Dog Night and all that.
That's great.
And so we always had, even at one time we had 8 in the group, I remember at one time. 8 and 9 is about the size of the group.
But we had
8 singers.
Yeah, we did
Ambrosia. Was that
Ambrosia?
There was 8 harmony. I mean, harmony's going on like crazy. What a great song that was! I always remember that.
Doobie Brothers, Blackwater,
and things like that.
That had like 5 or 6 parts going on.
Yeah, really. And we'd drive around and rehearse in a 39 Chrysler a lot of times back in the day.
39.
A 39 Chrysler that one of the guys.
That was a new car.
Where'd you get it?
Keyboard player had a 39 Chrysler.
Yeah. Really?
In the back
John Roberts in that picture. I don't have him, but he was back there 68, 69. And we used to drive around and practice those harmonies all the time.
Yep.
That tightened up everything. I mean, we'd drive around until 2, 3 in the morning singing.
Well, Bill, you mentioned something, too, that I thought of. The fact that you had horns made you different. Another thing that made bands different is if they had a girl singer. Because then you could do Jefferson.
Yeah.
Airplane stuff and Janis Joplin.
That's one thing or another. I mean, if you had a girl singer or brass, they would really,
it really set you off.
Which goes back to White Eyes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they were, anybody else have a girl during those times?
Not that I
can remember. I don't remember.
I don't remember the year, Crossroads.
Crossroads had, I can't remember her name.
But, Roth. Renee Young.
Renee Roth.
Yeah.
Well, Roth is
Terry Young's little sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They were very Christian.
Yeah.
Except for Eric Uhlhorn.
Eric Uhlhorn played keyboards. He's not too Christian.
Okay.
And Kurt Lanham was on drums.
Yeah. That's right.
And Rod Powell, your buddy.
They were real popular.
Yeah. Doug.
No, they were very popular.
Doug on bass,
my buddy?
Fretless bass.
I love Rock Pal, you know. Like a brother.
Okay, we had talked briefly, and I'd asked you about this. Trying to recall that Krug Park Festival that we were talking about.
Yeah, no, we had nothing to do with that. I couldn't remember it. Now, you guys might see if you remember.
Okay, I was going to ask you guys.
Yeah.
Okay, either 1970 or 1971, summer. Either the city or the North End Association or somebody set up a one-day rock festival at Krug Park. Our band played for it, and White Eyes, I remember, was the headliner. And I remember, and Jay Scaife was our rhythm guitarist, and he remembered White Eyes because Greg Camp wanted to borrow his speakers and wound up blowing them out.
Not surprising.
Yeah.
Krug Park,
but,
takes a while.
Yeah. But we came on maybe 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Do you guys remember?
I don't think I was in the band.
I think
then.
I was there because I remember seeing.
You think
White
you were
Eyes.
There?
I remember seeing White Eyes.
I don't think I was in the band.
Oh, okay.
And was just
not
amazed 71. By them. I thought they were great.
No, you weren't. Do you remember?
I was in
being
US.
In a band. Or
I was in USA then.
But they didn't play it or anything.
No. Well, I don't remember.
Bill, do you remember, was that 70 or 71?
I don't, probably around there, but I don't know.
Okay.
No, I was with Teddy.
But I do remember them. I was just blown away. They were doing like Jefferson Airplane and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But the thing was sort of built as a little, like a mini Woodstock or St. Joe's version of a Woodstock.
Yeah. I don't really remember that. I remember us, our final concert up there, you know.
Yeah, that was 82.
Yeah. But I don't
May 5th, 82. Yeah.
See, because I probably wasn't even there. I was probably playing somewhere with Jerry Allen and Teddy Paxton, Chris Moore, and USA somewhere.
Yeah.
We'd been, who knows where. We played all Maryville and all kinds of weird towns.
Yeah.
In that band. So.
A lot of groups.
Oh, we used to do that too. We played Conception Junction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All kinds of little.
We had to get the Highway Patrol to get us out of town in Hopkins.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, the girls liked the guys in the band, and they got the boys in the town.
The boys in the town didn't like it. Got jealous.
So we actually got hit by a club, didn't we?
Well, it was Cookie Ricker was at the door trying to stop me coming in. That's the way it all started. Now, this was before you.
Yeah.
This was like
was he your security?
Because I remember.
Yeah, he used to run lights. And
I remember going home, though, in some place where we got hit.
So liquor fire? That was your van.
Oh, yeah.
That was McCroskey was in the car, or the van, and we were going north. But that was a different time.
We were going north. Okay.
Cookie Rickle ran the lights and was.
Yeah, he helped out. Jim Ford was on base, and they were buddy-buddy. Yeah. So he always came along.
Security.
Did you know Mike Hughes? He was the original lead singer in Liquid Fire. Liquid Fire started by the group Continentals.
That's right.
The Continentals and a group called The Forecast that I was in when I was 14 or 15.
You guys were on a bulldozer.
And then we got together, and some of the guys were quitting, and we put those two groups together, and that's the way Liquid Fire started. And Liquid Fire, the name came up. Mike Hughes was talking about some band he saw that poured stuff on the stage and lit it. And it was kind of a Liquid Fire, he said. And I said, man, I said, now there's a good name for a band. And we said, well, no, he goes, that wasn't the name of the band. He goes, I was just talking about this stuff they poured on the stage. And I said, well, let's use that name, Liquid Fire.
Great name. We'll use that name until we come up with it.
Let's use it for a couple weeks.
If you look it up, it is an actual product that's used in the farming community for something, Liquid Fire. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah. I only found one other band, and it was in Europe.
Yeah, there was another band,
and they were kind of a heavy metal band. But anyway, it came up just really strange that we were just talking, and we said, let's just keep that name for a couple weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
So 20-some years later.
Yeah. Okay. Had any of you heard of Woodstock before the fact?
No.
And then the next question was, if so, did you go or consider going?
I had a ride, but I didn't. Right. I didn't go because I could not imagine that would be. And I knew the guys that were going. I didn't. If I'd have known it was Woodstock, you know, and I had a chance to visit history, well, you might have gone. But no, I couldn't.
At the time.
I couldn't imagine that would be a fun trip, and I don't know how many hundreds of miles it was up there, but.
I really didn't hear about it until the movie came out.
Yeah, it was '67 Ford Econoline station wagon. I couldn't imagine.
You really weren't in the hippie scene.
Well, no, I wasn't really.
No,
I knew about.
I didn't really know much of a hippie scene in St. Joe, quite honestly.
Right. Yeah.
There was some.
Yeah, some, but not much.
You know, after Woodstock, it at least it affected me and a lot of people. You know, we started wearing the bell bottoms and the fringe, and you'd cut out the seam of your pant leg and put an American flag in there.
And you get crap for a lot of it at first.
Oh, you know, walk around, you get the anemic mustache, you know, you get the stupid hair, and you walk around thinking you're cool, and you look back on that and go, oh, my God. Thank God there's no pictures of me like that.
Senior year, I remember the hair was touching my ears, and they sent me to go get a cut.
Yeah, me too.
It touched my ears.
Yeah.
In 69, it was a Beatle haircut.
Yeah.
It was like right there, and the principal, well, Mrs. Murphy, don't you look cute today? What? You're going home to get the haircut.
I'll tell you what's funny. The first time I saw Men at Work on and they had short hair. And I said, look at that rock and roll band. They have short hair. How weird.
What a bunch of squirrels.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, rock, I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but Woodstock had a big effect on all musicians.
All musicians, yeah.
I mean, I remember Jamie Hummer after Woodstock, man, he had the outfit.
Oh, yeah.
Like one of the guys, like the guy in 10 Years After.
Yeah.
Alvin Lee.
Yeah, he had the outfit with the scarf. And I mean, I was affected by all the people in Woodstock.
It gave me chills to watch a movie. I mean, Cocker and everything.
Well, you know, did you ever go to the Skylark when they had, you know, the movie?
You mean the drive-in theater?
Yeah. They showed Woodstock, and people got there at 3 in the afternoon, you know, where the swings all.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was down there with blankets and bongs and wine.
Really?
And, yeah, it was just a whole, probably 200-400 people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hey, man. Wow, man, it's Hendrix, you know. Because it was like, you know, life size, like you were right there.
I can tell you a song that followed Liquid Fire, though, out of that movie was Higher by Sly and the Family Stone.
Oh, yeah. That would have been great.
We ended up. Every gig with Higher, and we'd get people screaming Higher, and that stuck with us for
a while. And you got the idea of the
bumper sticker.
Liquid Fire Takes Me Higher.
Yeah, bumper sticker.
You got the bumper sticker.
Liquid Fire Takes Me Higher.
Liquid Fire Takes Me Higher.
And you got the idea from the Woodstock movie.
That's where we first saw this really generate.
Well, because the crowd in Woodstock,
they
got them going higher.
They went nuts.
So. We'll try that and see if we can get the crowd yelling.
We were probably doing it when you joined the band, weren't we?
Yeah.
Okay, so we did it from at least 75 to 82.
No, you weren't doing it, because when I joined the band, that's when, you know.
That's when it happened.
It was my idea.
No, but I do remember you said it's in A minor, and I said, I've been playing in A major, and you go, I don't care, it's in A minor.
Jeff Lux said the same thing to me. When I was getting the chords to How Long, and I'm always, and he goes, and he was right.
Yeah.
And I go, I thought it was Z, and he goes, nope.
Nope, that's the end of that.
Nope.
Well, my next question was, did Woodstock influence your band? How? And
That did throw. There were probably
we
other.
We picked up some songs. We used to play some Who.
Yeah, I was going to say there were some other songs, and they were just.
It affected a lot of other bands, mm-hmm. bit more than it did Liquid Fire.
Yeah.
And USA, we weren't affected by Woodstock at all. But there's a lot of bands that came out like.
Was Chicago?
Jay.
It wasn't in the movie.
No.
But I thought they were.
No.
But there were a lot of bands in town that started, you know, emulating the Woodstock look, and I think that actually just started a nationwide trend of, like I said before, fringe jackets and bell bottoms and sandals.
Well, and the stage excitement, because normally before then it was like bands would just stand there and play, and then, you know, all of a sudden you become an animated and just kind of look like you're into your music.
And it gave you license to.
Yeah,
you feel stupid acting that way before, but then wait a minute, they're doing it, so we don't look stupid.
Yeah, people like it. Yeah,
it's like if they did this in Woodstock, we can do it.
Yeah,
it was kind of like that.
We'd start wearing clothes different than you'd wear every day on stage.
Yeah. Did your band see the Woodstock movie together?
No.
I think I saw it with you one time.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, I at least saw it 5 or 6 times.
Right? Yeah. But I think we were together one time.
Yeah,
because our band went to see it all together and everything.
And
like you said, we came out. It wasn't so much the music, although we came out and said, okay, we want to do Soul Sacrifice.
We still do. Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted to do the drum solo.
Yeah.
And Jamie was talking about, Jamie Hummer was talking about doing a little Help for My Friends. Mm-hmm. Trying to think that there might have been another song, but the big thing was that, wow, did you see that great fringe jacket? Or did you see those bell bottoms or so? Man, I got to get me some of those. So it had a lot to do with fashion, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's good. That's good observation.
Yeah.
I know where I was in 70 and 71. I was at Bagnell Dam with Bob McCroskey.
Oh, really?
Really?
That's right. Yeah.
Playing with who?
A band called Pacific Thirst right off of Bagnell Dam.
Oh.
That's right.
Look at the Ozarks.
Look at the Ozarks for 2 seasons, I think. Oh. Get drunk and go out on the Larry Don.
Yep.
Larry Don.
Well, I'll tell you, that's really all the questions I had, unless there's something else you guys wanted to add.
I hope that helps you. There's a,
It's great.
We could talk for hours and hours about all the stories, but you wouldn't want to record some of them.
Well, I think it's nice to have something like this on tape, so to speak, tape or digital or whatever they call this, and just to, you know, have something down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope it helps you.
Yeah.
I mean, glad to do it.
Well, thanks a lot.
I can remember looking at guys on tape. Look at that guy. He's up there playing. He must be 50.
Oh, yeah, that's another funny thing. That we're
here
still
we
playing.
Are in our 60s, and we're still playing.
Yeah.
I used to say that about getting a job or working. I said, I'm going to make sure I get a good job because I don't want to be 40 years old still playing Ramone.
Well, and I remember seeing interviews with Mick Jagger, like in Rolling Stone, and they said, do you think you'll still be doing this at 40? And he just laughed. He said, are you kidding?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
And they're seven?
He was
75.
Dancing after he got his heart fixed.
Yeah, he got his heart fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He went to Elton John's house for some party I saw on YouTube.
It's crazy.
With his daughter, who looks just like Jerry Hall.
I tell you what, it tells you, too, and I can tell you this from working at a music store, and you worked in a music store, that age is really has nothing to do with music, because I have young people all the time come, and they talk to me just like I'm the same age they are, because music has no age to it.
Common denominator.
It is amazing.
That's great.
I heard the other day on radio that Rod Stewart released Maggie May the year that his current wife was born.
1971.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Well, hey, we're signing up. This is Jerry Jordan signing off for Bill Hoffman and Greg Murphy and Bill Reese. And we hope you've enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you.